This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 192 for Wednesday, May 18th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight for the first time in a long time, Mr. Aaron Holland, a comic book shop owner, Coliseum of Comics, Fashion Square Mall, Orlando, Florida, and tabletop game designer at DiceLabGames.com. Welcome, sir.
Hey, Joel. Thanks for having me back, man. Hey,
man, my pleasure. Always good to have you on. We talk quite a bit when I have time to play Heroes of the Storm. It's kind of how we met and how we tend to spend some free time together. I took a minute to take a spin through DiceLabGames.com before we started the show, and it looks awesome, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm stoked for you. And I really like the avatar that you have on your website.
Well, someone I happen to know that's also on this podcast right now did a bang-up job drawing a cool avatar for me.
Thanks. Actually, it was from a really cool opportunity to do a commission for you and your wife earlier this year. So that was awesome. A lot of the times when I do work with friends, it usually involves a spouse or a special occasion. Mm-hmm. You know, like a mother's birthday or I'm actually talking with a friend right now about doing something for grandparents. So that's really cool. So like as an artist, it's really satisfying to do something that people find special because it's,
yes,
there's, you know, the relationship exists already. So that's there. But then there's this thing that is inspired by that relationship. And then you get to talk to usually one of the, especially if it's a situation where it's like a couple or a marriage, and you get to talk to one of the other and they're talking about, you know, all the cool things that they do together and how much they love their, in your case, your wife. And so it becomes that fuel to then put together something really, really nice to do. And as it happens, if you crop out, if you go the opposite way, you crop out the wife, then we can get you a nice avatar for social media and stuff like that. So, and I think if I remember correctly, we made one for her too, right?
Yes. Yeah, we did. Because with the picture of us together, it's just kind of in standard clothes. And she's a chef in her career. Yeah. And so the avatar you made had this look, that is, you know, funny, you know, various like meats in the background and her chef outfit. And it looks awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, it's something I'm actually not doing a whole lot of anymore. The avatar thing has sort of, it was fun for a while and it was a pretty hot item in my store, but it's sort of not, hasn't continued to be the thing that I do a lot of. Mm-hmm. But when I'm doing portraits as commissions, the avatar thing becomes pretty easy because, of course, you're already doing the portrait.
You just gotta tweak it a little bit.
Just do a crop, yeah. So that's, and it's always a nice little fun add-on too, because I mean, it's hard when you've got a large image that then people are trying to crop and fit on social media, and you're just like, you know what? Let me save you, the customer who is not always an artsy person, you know.
Yes, exactly.
From messing around in Photoshop or Pixelmator or whatever you're in, give me 20 minutes, you know, and I can at least crop it. If not, you know, give me longer and I can come up with something else. So
yeah, always cool to, I mean, how many times has everyone like just uploaded a picture and then squeezed it or, you know, expanded it or whatever, you
right
know?
Yeah, and that's why, especially when I'm dealing with clients, like larger corporate clients, like that have like logos, graphic design that I've done, things like that, you give them everything you can possibly imagine to export from this file that they might possibly need to keep them from messing with things later.
Yeah, like here's 10 versions in like 4 different sizes each or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise you end up with like this crazy pixelated version on Facebook. And you're just like, no, don't show that. I didn't do that for you.
And especially if they're like, here, buy Joel Duggan.
I'm like, no. Yeah, like, why don't you send them a link to at least the high-res version? Like, come on. Yeah, well, and it's not always, I have to say, like, not to point fingers at clients, because sometimes, and a lot of the times actually, the image quality on things like Facebook and other social media sites, depending on especially if it's a mobile app, like they tend to mess with things. And like, I even, it's so, so hard to figure out, like, just to get the CitadelCafe.com responsive, we've had to implement some changes. It's great. It looks great on mobile, but sometimes the image quality goes just a little bit funky when the screen is not exactly right. And the rescaling is not happening at like, you know, eights or 16s or whatever pixel makes that screen happy. And you get some really wonky blurriness happening. And it's just like, even as a designer, sometimes you can't figure that out. So, I mean, as the average Joe goes, trying to figure out what Facebook is going to do with your images is just like, well, yeah, forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've stopped fighting, and I just, you know, here's the thing on social media. If you want to see the nice thing, here's the link. Go to the other page. You know, sites like DeviantArt and some other, like ArtStation, they always have really nice big images. Or they have options like ArtStation is awesome. But like, you can see the image on a nice black background. There's a little bit of text and some information about the person that made it on the right. And then when you hover over the image, there's a button that says, look at me full screen. And you can just send it to a new window and look at the thing full scale. And it's like, oh, sweet. This is what the concept painting is supposed to look like.
Yeah. That is one of the nice things about ArtStation. Like, DeviantArt's good as well. I'm not going to besmirch either one. But like on DeviantArt, there's a lot of noise around every picture.
Yeah, very true. I haven't yet. And I did last year because there was some sort of special. But I was really having a hard time keeping up on DeviantArt. Most of the time I was trying to do it via mobile. I did not like their app, so I was just using the website, just bookmarked onto my home screen. And the ads on DeviantArt cripple a mobile browser.
Oh, really?
You know, like, especially on an older device. Like, I'm talking about a tablet that's, like, 5 to 6 years old. So, I mean, it's pushing.
Upgrade.
Yeah, it's pushing limits for sure. But now, if I'm going to look at the average website, it's okay, right? But but ads just destroy it. So, when I made the jump to just say, you know what? I get an awful lot out of DeviantArt. I want to support them. I want to also not see ads. So, I'll pay the, I think it was $50. And I had some money in my PayPal account. And I have to say, at first it was like night and day. Like, it was just such a better experience. And it wasn't, and then I get used to it. And then recently, probably around like February or March, that lapsed. And now I'm back to having ads. And even on the desktop, it's so noisy. My only complaint currently about DeviantArt, because having the ads removed was a great, you know, experience. I don't know why an art site is booger green.
Like, yeah.
It's an ugly color. It really is.
I always kind of wondered that. For somebody supposed to be artsy, it's very, like, it's not even drab. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, and they've reamped the design over the last year, which I think is what prompted me to subscribe. Everything is very clean. It's very modern looking, clean lines. It doesn't look like a website from 2005 anymore. I mean, it's still a lot of information and a large community to manage, so that they have to have a lot of those tools still there. But the color is, like, it could have easily been, even like, stay with green, just go darker or a little bit more, I don't know.
Yeah.
Less snot like would be my only criticism, I guess, at this point. But I lost count. But I generally, if I don't check for a week, I'll have 200 or 300 posts.
Holy cow.
To check out. Well, and some of these people are monsters and they're posting like every day. So like there's a couple of folks that post quite a bit. Yeah, and like, not everything is amazing. Some people are just posting sketches and stuff, but I find that I follow enough people now that I definitely have. I can enjoy a Friday night and a glass of scotch and just kind of flipping through DeviantArt.
I'm at the point in like my game design right now where I'm actively looking at like artists and kind of. So I started following a few people on DeviantArt, but nowhere near that degree.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, if you want, I mean, it's my own biased editorial, I guess. But if you go to my DeviantArt account and then look at my favorites, I've mentioned this on the Comics Coast to Coast before. I'm not sure if I've ever mentioned it on the Citadel Cafe, but I have a rule for myself that I do not favorite a piece unless then I can articulate why. And then leave that as a comment for the artist that made it. And sometimes it's not anything.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, unless it's anything, you know, I don't want to say, oh, that's cool. Like, I have to say, I like the light in this piece, or I really enjoy the shapes, or whatever it is. Because it keeps me, well, one, it keeps my favorites from being like out of control. and it keeps it down to like the best of my favorite artists.
Yeah.
Anything else that I like, but I can't really articulate, I just right click and download and put it on a screensaver. So then on like on my television or something like that, it rotates by on a regular basis and I get it that way. But you know, when it comes to favorites, a number of times I've, you know, when I've got artists that are like, hey Joel, do you have any artists that you can recommend or any new people I can follow? And I just say, look, go check out my favorites on DeviantArt, because they're people that are producing really good, really consistent work. And I feel, because of my cartoon background and then my kind of drive to slowly but surely be a better Photoshop painter, I've got this weird spectrum of people, you know, all the way from like comic book creature box guys, you know, and Scotty Young, all the way up to like concept painters for EA Star Wars and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a wide range. But I'm quickly becoming, as we mentioned earlier, an ArtStation fan. That is a great discovery site. It's just wicked to kind of kick back and say, like, I have no idea where I'm going. I'm looking at digital 2D and characters, and we'll see what falls in my lap, you know? Mm-hmm. And I find sometimes you can find some super cool gems. Lots of Blizzard guys on ArtStation as well.
Yeah, like Ben Zweifel turned me onto that a few months ago, and I've been checking it out every now and then. I haven't done as much as I have on DeviantArt as far as like following people though yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. What I like about ArtStation is that they'll give me email updates, and you can get emails from specific artists, yay or nay, and then you can also, from the people you're following, ArtStation will give you like a weekly email drop in your inbox.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great about it is that they send thumbnails. So if you look and everything's like, yeah, that looks like everybody's work, but nothing really says you need to see this right now. You can just delete the email and check your updates later. But if, you know, you look at the thumbnails and you're like, ooh, okay, there are like three pieces in that I really don't have time to look at right this second, but I definitely want to, you can flag it for later and then have the time to go and know that today you should check out, you know, ArtStation, because there's some really cool stuff up there. And I really enjoy the respectful email update, you know, like not the spammy ones, but like the ones that kind of like, look, this is really information that you want. It's distilled into some very quick reading material. Sometimes you don't even have to read it. It's just like, hey, there's eight thumbnails. Do you like any of them? Yeah, they're cool, but nothing is really kind of grabbing me right now. You can just, I check it later, you know, and I find that kind of stuff invaluable right now with how busy I am.
Yeah, no, I've been like this, I don't know what it is about this year, but like myself and so many people I know and my wife, like everyone's just crazy busy and like there's no time to do anything this year.
Yeah, when Ibit was on the show last week, we were talking about Nerdtacular and how that's not happening. So then there's this hole where normally people are planning that event, but then Brian has already just completely filled it with like starting a new podcast with him and then like, you know, probably a couple of other CD projects. And it was just like, yeah, it's quickly when you receive free time, how, you know, the people that are podcasters or streamers or someone like you that's designing games, like if you've got that kind of a time demanding hobby or something you want to push past just a hobby, then, you know, that free time gets eaten up like almost immediately.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So before we dive into the show, is there anything that you can share about what's going on with Dice Lab Games?
I'm not a lot other than like I'm just juggling. Gosh, I started using Trello. It's like a productivity kind of organization, like internet pin board almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty visual, which is kind of cool. And so that's helping me keep a little more organized. But I'm always juggling like five or six or seven designs at once. Just I kind of go where the inspiration is. You know, I'll work on something and test it for a while, and oh, that's not working. Put it on the back burner, like. You know, let my brain kind of sit on that one for a while. But the one I'm actively working on, tentatively it's called Xenocrash. It cool. is a, I guess you can call it a sci-fi thriller survival game.
Okay.
Everyone that's at the table is a crew member of this exploration vessel, and you're tasked with tracking down, you know, planets that could be habitable or use resources. But in this case, something goes wrong when you're descending through the atmosphere and the ship crashes. The engines go out, so your task is to fix the ship and escape the planet before the poisonous atmosphere overcomes you, or like the ravenous, you know, mutated creatures that are left on the planet devour you.
Right. So it sounds like it's almost like an escape game.
Kind of, in a way. It's a pseudo adventure. There's a little bit of randomness. In the way that's like set up, because every game plays differently because there's several different like exterior locations you could be at. Because
oh, fun. Okay.
You're, Yeah, you're trying to track down resources that are usable on the planet, and everywhere you go, whether it's like this weird valley or these mountains or whatever, like everything's got different, you know, perils that you're trying to overcome or avoid or just not get eaten by.
Right, and it depends on, you know, when you leave the ship, do you go left or right as to what you run into? And
I'm kind of like, the ship is your home point. You can kind of go back and forth. And
right.
Cool. Yeah.
Is it like a board game? Like, is there an actual play
board
to it?
Yeah, it is a board game, yes.
Right. So would you do something, or would you plan on doing something like Catan, where the board is like randomized?
It kind of is. So you've got the main board has the ship.
Right.
And like, so you've got, you know, your science lab where you can do stuff, and your med bay and operations and all that. There's every location does something. But the randomness comes in. So as soon as you leave the ship, there are three planet locations you can travel to, and those are randomized at the start of the game, basically.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Each one's giving you kind of different look of, like, you know, you can, you know, theme like what the planet's like, or make, you know, make here set it up like this for an easy game, or set it up like for a difficult version, or do a random. Yeah.
And stuff like that is really nice because then it has a lot of replayability.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so like if you're playing it for the, you know, 100th time, but with somebody that's new to the game, you can still get something out of it because you've got no idea, you know, what the random planet combination is going to be.
Yes.
Yeah. Very, very cool. So I like, at what point, you know, when you're doing all the game designing and stuff like that, do you start to move to, I guess, prototyping, or even like the final, like the art, like, I imagine the art stage would be like the end.
Yeah, I've never published anything yet. I'm just, you know, I'm definitely an aspiring, you know, designer publisher, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But this one's at the point where I've done so much testing on it with, you know, people I know and fair amount of random people that this summer I'm going to be I've booked time to pitch to a handful of publishers at some cons and stuff. So nice. We'll see how that goes. I mean, I'm not going to get my hopes up, but at least one. I did it last year with a different game. They call it publisher designer speed dating, where you have five minutes with a group of publishers. They call time, and then everyone changes tables, and a new group of publishers comes and sits down, and you do that for like 2 hours, which was it was a great like gauntlet to kind of go through and experience. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to doing something like that again this year, as well as getting, you know, some extended time with a couple of them.
Yeah. Do you get some constructive feedback in that short of a time period?
You'd be surprised. It's a wide variety. Like, some were very constructive and asked a lot of questions. And then some were like, yeah, I'm not interested, and just got up and walked away from the table. It's like, okay, wow. I feel good.
Yeah. I guess not really taking the time to think like, well, you do represent a company sitting there, Joe. You should probably at least be nice, you know?
Yeah. Well, in their defense, like, they're being pitched dozens and dozens of games at this event, and they probably see, you know, 5 to 10 a week, like, in general. Yeah. It's, you know, they can tell right away if this is or isn't for them, I would think, for at a certain point.
And I can sympathize with that experience. Like, there's a number of, I don't have so many readers that I get a lot, but once in a while at a convention, usually the larger conventions, I'll have someone come up and they'll start suggesting storylines for Starcross. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes they're a very articulate, well-read reader. They really enjoy the strip and they know the characters, and they're pretty bang on. I've even had some people suggest stuff that I have had planned, right? Uh-huh. You know, and have it kind of go out. Like, people would say like, hey, I've got an idea for Charlie's day job, etc. And I always have to like bite my tongue. It's like, oh, wow, you're right. now that that's out of the bag, you know, I can actually talk to people about it, but sometimes people write on, but other times, you're talking to somebody that is clearly just wanting to exert their, they want to check the box, and that I suggested a comic strip to somebody. Right. And it's clear that they just haven't thought about it, or they've read a couple comics, maybe some of yours, but they don't really understand how to write for comics.
And yeah,
it's a very amateur, you know, idea, and you immediately don't like it, but you still have to sit there and smile and nod and thank them for their, you know. And
I think a lot of everyone wants to be accepted and liked, and they want to be thought of as intelligent and bright. And you know, when someone's come up to you with that, it's, you know, it's because they want to be kind of accepted into the fold or have that kind of feather in their cap. And I would assume it's always well-intentioned, but...
Yeah, a lot of times. I mean, sometimes when they suggest vulgar stuff, I'm just like, yeah, you know, did you read the comic? Because I don't swear. I don't do dirty jokes. Like, sure, this is a funny Facebook post maybe, but, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know about actually spending, you know, the day to draw that, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, the stuff that really does not fit.
Yeah, they're definitely kind of imposing, like, their sense of humor onto, you know, these characters and how they envision them as opposed to what you're going for.
Yeah, it's one of those conversations where if it was in one of those movies where it's like, you know, it would be really cool if, like, Rogue and Superman, and he's like, oh, wait, what? Like, back up the train, Charlie.
Yeah.
Back
up the train. We hear our fair share of, you know, theories and potential stories at the store all the time.
Yeah, so. I can imagine. I can imagine. One of the things that I had the time to take in this week, and I was poised in my chair waiting for the moment for this to drop. I imagine you probably were pretty excited about it too. Mm-hmm. And that is Dragons, the Blizzard Entertainment Overwatch short that was released on YouTube on Monday? Monday. 16th. Yeah, Monday. And we've talked about a couple of these on the show before, so it's not going to be completely new to our listeners. But this is the third, and I would say, I don't want to say the best, because I really like the Tracer Widowmaker one.
Yeah, I like the Tracer Widowmaker one the best, probably.
Yeah, but as far as not being goofy and not relying on any kind of, like, we'll call it Pixar humor, to kind of insert these little light moments. This was a serious 8 minutes of jammed story about two characters that, I mean, I only know are super interesting because everybody that I know that is playing Overwatch really finds these characters interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm coming at it completely from the outside. I still haven't read the comics. I've got them downloaded to read, but I haven't gotten to them yet. But, like, this kind of stuff, it was so good. Genji and Hanzo?
Yes.
Are the two characters. And I hesitate to say, a little bit of a spoiler. If you're going to go watch it, then you might want to tune out right this second.
That's not a spoiler.
But whatever. They're brothers. I mean, if you're into this game at all, then you know that. Mm-hmm. But in the short, if this was your very first experience with Overwatch, they don't get into that until, like, the last minute of the short. But I thought it was really well handled, and beautiful mm-hmm. to look at. Just so, so cool. And it answers and then raises questions all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I feel like how, cause I got into the beta, I was in the closed beta and I played it for a fair amount. And, I mm-hmm. thought it was neat how all these shorts have been actual, like, located in actual maps of the game where you can pick out, like,
oh, really?
Landmarks and things. Oh, yeah, cool. Definitely.
See, I didn't know that, having not played the game. That's really neat. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I really liked how they incorporated this. Like, when he's, you know, walking past the cars at the beginning and comes to the gate, like, you go, that's, you know, kind of a hold point for an objective in the game. And
no
then
kidding.
When he goes to the... oh my god, the altar, I guess you can call it.
Mm-hmm.
That's like objective B, and it's so neat to kind of see and put into perspective, oh, it's not just this map we run around and shoot people on, like, oh, hey, there's history and something happened here.
Yeah, very cool. And probably cool to see it in, like, super high-res rendered
kind of
cartoon stuff, too. I get, for a quick rundown, they're essentially both kind of ninja characters. Hanzo has a bow and arrow, and Genji has a sword. It's more than just a sword. I mean, both of them have more than just what those are. It's a futuristic world, so everything's got some pretty high tech gadget mm-hmm. to it. Genji's sword glows, and his armor does a bunch of really cool stuff. And he's head to toe armor, like, he's all canned in like Darth Vader.
Yeah, he's very much like a cyborg at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any indication in the game as to what happened to him?
Not really. Like, for each character, if you go to them, I think, if I remember correctly, oh no, it was on their website. They've got, like, a little, like, one or two paragraph bio for everybody.
Okay. So that'd be worth checking out too. Because mm-hmm. I can appreciate, I mean, Blizzard obviously does a really great story. It's one of the reasons I play a lot of their games. But the level of detail that they go into these stories, it kind of makes me wonder, like, does it really matter? And is it good, or is it just really frustrating as an arena shooter? Like, knowing that you're never going to really play a story mode. I shouldn't say never, but it's unlikely that a story mode is imminent you know, for you to then flesh out the story of Hanzo and Genji. So right now you have only the blurbs, the comics, if they're in the comics, and then the short.
I think it just more informs like the theme behind it all, and the I think based on, you know, I don't know if you go back in like Blizzard lore for what, you know, they were working on Project Titan, which I guess was going to be like an MMO based around Overwatch. Well, they ended up scrapping that and switching it to a first-person shooter, is my understanding.
Right.
So I'm sure they had developed so much backstory and so many characters, and it's probably pretty easy to translate that into this shooter now as far as that goes. But I think a lot of people are disappointed there wasn't like a story mode. I know I was, but you know, it is what it is. It is a fun game. I've enjoyed playing it.
Yeah. Did you like it when you first started playing it?
When I first started, no, I didn't. It was weird. So I went to BlizzCon last year, and that's where they kind of unveiled it for the first time for letting people, you know, get it hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the worst experience ever because I didn't know what the controls were, and they had people that kept going through the lines over and over and over and over again. And you know, by the end of the first day, there's people who are kind of half experts on playing the game. And so by the time I get through, it's like, oh, I just am getting headshot left and right, and this is not fun, and I'm falling in pits and holes. And but so I almost didn't play when I got in the beta. I was like, eh, I don't know. And after a couple games, there's just something very very endearing and cool about it. Like, I like that there's a wide variety of characters, not just a shooter. Like, you can play a full-on healer if you want, and it's critical to your team's success.
Yeah, and if you're not as twitchy as some of the young folks out there that can, you know, snipe you from a map away, then that might be the way to go.
Yeah. Or they've got characters that are just like, you know, this guy lobs grenades, or this person just shoots rockets. You know, there's a variety of weaponry and for a lot of different play styles, and I think that's what's going to... You know, I think this is going to be a big deal for them.
Is it only first person, or do they do some third person stuff too?
When you activate a couple of abilities, you go third person on certain characters, but for the most part, it's first person.
Right. Like, I love the idea and the look and feel of Reinhardt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, well, at the same time, I don't want to just stare at a stick and a hammer all game. Like,
yes.
That's the kind of character that you feel big and monstrous when you can see that you are big and monstrous, but when you're just looking through the grills of his helmet and all you see is your hands and a hammer, like I don't know how appealing that would be. And I say this all from having access to the beta forever and then having nothing to play it on. Like, I've had friends talk to me and say like, hey, you know, do you have access to Overwatch? They're like, yeah, I do. Like, oh, you should play. I said, no, I can't. I don't have a machine that will run it. And they're like, oh, dude, that sucks. That's always the response I get, because like they've been champing at the bit for weeks to get access, and they finally get in on like the beta weekend or whatever's going on. And I'm just like, nah, I've been you know, able to play for a while as far as the Blizzard end of things is concerned. And it's something I really enjoyed, actually, because I was in really early on the Heroes beta as well. And now I haven't been in a long time because my time constraints have been so tight, but I enjoyed watching the development of that game. I was in early enough in the beta that I really did see the progression from like early beta through release, and then even through the last year of release, watching it change and grow over time too.
Yeah, no, there's been a lot of positive stuff happening with Heroes. Like, I don't get a chance to play it as often as I want to either, but when I do, I really like it. Just, there's so many characters now. There's so many, again, variety of play. Like, they really appeal to a lot of styles of players, and I don't know. They seem to know what they're doing, I think.
Yeah, they've been around for a few years. You know, I'm sure that a few of those guys have got a story down pat. Mm-hmm. If anybody out there listening is interested, you can go to Play Overwatch, the channel on YouTube, and you will be able to find Dragons, or just do a quick Google search. If it should be the top hit almost immediately. And then before you watch Dragons, if you haven't seen the others, check out the first one, which is something to do with Winston. I don't remember, that was called Recall, maybe?
Yeah, that's actually the opening cinematic for the game now, too.
Oh, okay. And then... something else.
Well, it focused on Widow.
Yeah. What was the
Widowmaker?
What was the Widowmaker and Tracer one called?
I don't remember.
Along Came a Spider or something like that.
Maybe. Yeah, it sounds right.
I should know. Anyway. They're all there. You can find them. Watch them. They're very, very cool. And there's also comics. I haven't read them, so I can't speak to any of that. They looked good, but I haven't read them.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah. Well, I tried to read them on the Blizzard website, and that's something they did not get right.
Oh, yeah. No, I opened up the Symmetra one the other day.
Yeah.
It's, no.
Just download the PDF.
Yeah.
Yes, that is the way to go. All right. Well, that can be, I guess, our springing off point to get into Game of Thrones. We had a juicy episode this week, so I don't want to delay too long. This is where you, the listener, should you not be caught up on Game of Thrones Season 6, you should bail, because Aaron and I are going to spoil the crap out of Episode 4, Book of the Stranger. So, everybody gone? Okay, good. Bye. This episode, the plot summary centers around Sansa, Brienne, and Podrick arriving at Castle Black as the former are reunited with Jon Snow. At Winterfell, Asha attempts to assassinate Ramsay, but is killed herself in the process. Ramsay sends a letter to Jon, threatening to harm Rickon if Sansa is not returned, and Jon resolves to march south and take back Winterfell. In Meereen, Tyrion meets with the slave masters of Slaver's Bay and offers peace if they will end slavery within 7 years, an action that angers Missandei and Grey Worm. Littlefinger returns to the Vale to mobilize the soldiers against Ramsay Bolton. In King's Landing, Margaery is permitted to visit Loras, while Cersei, Jaime, Kevin, and Lady Olenna plan to stop the High Sparrow. Theon arrives at Pyke and explains to Yara that he will support her claim at the King's Moot, and Dario and Jorah arrive in Vase Dothrak, with the former discovering the latter's grayscale. So Dario finds out that Jorah's got grayscale. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these wiki articles are horribly written. Daenerys meets with the Khals and sets the temple on fire. When she emerges unhurt, the Dothraki bow to her. So that's the Coles Notes version. Off of my kind of just gut reaction to this episode, it was awesome. This is the kind of Game of Thrones episodes that I want. You know, it started off with a very seldom felt joyful moment of Sansa and Jon reuniting.
Yeah, there were some of the feels there. I'll be honest.
Oh my gosh! Like it just because that we didn't get that in the books, right? Like we haven't gotten that far. So to see that on screen and to see like the disbelief, they're both very good actors. Mm-hmm. So to see, you know, that happening was just epic for me. I really enjoyed it.
And something about that I read that I thought was kind of interesting was that their characters have never spoken on screen before.
Right.
Which was bizarre, but that's, you know, it's really cool to see them together for sure.
Yeah, and I've seen some press, you know, junket stuff where the actors are at the release party. And everybody's just elated to see one another. And it's because they haven't seen each other in like 18 months because of doing different projects. And somebody's filming in Spain and somebody's filming. You know, like aside from a heartbeat, like Daenerys hasn't been in Westeros for seasons.
Yeah.
Right. So she wouldn't have any reason to film in Ireland or anything like that, right?
Not yet, anyway.
No, not so much. I mean, there were some mountainous regions that she was in that maybe they could have been filming in Northern Europe, and she might have had some cross, you know, filming with some other characters just because of the locations were close. But like, I don't know for sure, and it seems unlikely because most of what she's been in has just been dirt and sand and, you know, different kind of, I would say with probably like Western Europe over.
Yeah. It's always been one of the weird things about her character storyline too, is it's so separate from everything else going on in the show.
You
just feel very isolated with her sometimes.
Yeah, and I remember last season we were all pretty excited once Tyrion and Daenerys.
Yeah,
met, right. So then you get two characters in the same room together, and I feel like we're starting to get a lot more of that now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a little reunite between Sansa and Theon last season into this season. Then we've got Theon now with his sister. We've got Sansa and Jon. We've got Tyrion and Daenerys. And now Daenerys and Jorah and Dario are all together.
Yeah. And for me, it almost feels like we're entering the beginning of like the third act, and they're setting up a lot of big important stuff to happen.
Yeah. It's definitely feels like something big is brewing, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think And we can, for those of you that don't know, usually I end up doing quite a large kind of swath of notes for the Game of Thrones section, and the guests always have lots to contribute, but they just say, look, you've already written things out, we'll just go off yours. Not this week. Anyway, this week, Aaron had so much cool stuff to say that I'd rather we just kind of focus on kind of where you were coming from. The episode, because it just like some of the ideas that you have are just so interesting. So, well, I mean, like, start where you want to start, man.
Well, I end up, a couple of the guys at the store, we talk Game of Thrones, you know, on and off throughout the week after the new episode's there. And I spend a lot of time on the Game of Thrones subreddit, just kind of reading up on people's theories and just, you know, the tinfoil hat stuff, even just kind of, ooh, that'd be kind of neat. And so I love everything about this. And this season is just kind of, it's just really juicy with, you know, especially because you're saying, you know, people who've been reading the books can't really be like, oh, well, we're going here. Like, no one can do that anymore. So everything is completely, you know, just educated guesses at this point by anybody commenting on it. So I find that kind of fascinating.
Yeah, no, I think that kind of thinking outside the box and having that freedom now that we're not bound by, oh, well, I know what happens in book three. I wonder how they're going to handle that in the show. Mm-hmm. Is one of the cool things about this season for sure. I don't know, I have a hard time kind of pulling the two images that stick in my head for the show are the reuniting of Jon and Sansa, mm-hmm. and the following scenes, and then also the final scenes with Daenerys in Vase Dothrak. Uh-huh. Those are the kind of the show flags for me. Was there anything in between that you found?
There are so many cool moments in this show of just, you know, there's pretty much no action for the most part, but there was so much, you know, dialogue and things that were of importance for, like, hey, here's things where we're going, or here's, you know, here's a thing, like, you know, Brienne near the beginning, you know, showing up and Tormund Giantbane just giving her the eye, like, ooh, hey, what's going on here? Who's this?
Yeah.
But then Brienne laying down the smack talk with Davos and Melisandre, just like, yeah, I killed Stannis. What you can do about it? You know, that's just this kind of just drop the mic kind of moment for her. Like, you know, she just walks off. So I'm curious if that's going to
end up
becoming something else. You know?
Not to mention, she didn't say it straight out, but she certainly laid the groundwork for, like, hey, Red Woman, I know who you are.
Yeah.
I know what you're capable of. Can't prove it, but I'm pretty sure that you killed Renly. So. Yeah. You're on my book.
Well, and Davos was there for the murder of that, like when the weird shadow baby was born, you know?
Yeah, exactly, right? So I just, it's cool to see, there's a lot of dialogue, but there was no empty dialogue,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, normally we're used to things like where Cersei marches into the little council and talks her face off for 5 minutes, and people are like, well, you don't matter. And it's like, well, this whole scene doesn't matter, so why are we watching it? You mm-hmm. know, whereas everything in this episode, it felt like was very important.
Yes, it did. Like, even, like, you know, when Brienne's talking to Davos and Melisandre, that whole scene just got this look of almost, I don't know, guilt or sorrow on her face. Like, she brought someone back from the dead, but she's still not happy about it. Like, her faith is still very, I think her faith is kind of broken somewhat, you know, after hearing that there's nothing beyond that she was hoping to find out.
Yeah, that Jon met the Red God and he sent him back and all that kind of stuff.
Maybe like guilt over Shireen, or who knows, you know, but
something like that. Yeah.
Something's changing with her character for sure.
And they're doing a really good job of communicating that now. I didn't catch it in episode one. Like, that wasn't something I clued into, but the last couple of episodes, there's been more of a change overall in the character, everything from the way she walks to the way she communicates with people. And she seems fearful. Right.
Like, I don't know if it's fearful or if it's just, yeah, like, maybe she, you know, maybe she's in that zone of, like, you know, she's post books also, where it's like, I don't know what's going to happen next because everything I saw before was a lie in my vision. So,
well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, if you're dealing with what she has believed in, and she's got this obviously some magic that has been keeping her alive mm-hmm. for a very long time, all with the belief that there's something after.
Yeah.
So don't fear death, because you will live on in the magical, you know, Lord of Light realm. But now she's hearing and seeing all things that say the exact contrary. She's like, wait a minute, maybe I'm not immortal. You know, maybe there's an end to this. And then you're not walking around like, you know, nothing can stop you. Cause like, wait a minute, all this giant woman has to do is look at me funny and I'm done, you know?
Yeah. Well, and maybe, you know, all the things she's done, all the people she's sacrificed and all the prophecies that were false that she believed. And yeah, there's a lot going on in her head that she's processing right now.
Yeah. I'd be curious to have a little bit more of that in some sort of dialogue, maybe with Davos or even John.
Yeah.
You know, just to kind of get it out there, because there's a lot that can be communicated with just silent acting and eyes and stuff.
Which she's doing right now.
Which she is, yeah. But sometimes it's like, well, okay, I get that she's upset, but like, I'd like to know more of why. Yeah. And I mean, I think your speculations are probably right, but I don't know. Like, there's that delicate line between, I don't want Game of Thrones to become network television and have it spelled out for me over and over again each episode. But I also, when things are so vague, and I think it's probably because there are so many storylines to try to keep straight in Game of Thrones.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That's probably why I need just a little bit more hand-holding. Like, a good example was Vaes Dothrak, which is, you know, the center of culture and the capital for the Dothraki, even though they're nomadic. Like, this is kind of like a holy place. I had completely forgotten about that, because maybe the last time we heard about that was maybe season two. Or season one.
Yeah.
You know, and so that they made this huge deal about it, but then I didn't really catch on until just this episode where you're like, oh, this is all the Dothraki. Like, this is everybody.
Yeah. You know? Well, when Davos and, oh my gosh, what's the other guy's name? I'm blanking.
Oh, Daario and
Daario. Yeah, Daario.
Jorah?
Yeah, Daario and Jorah. So when they're sitting up there on the hill kind of scoping things out, you know, the only reference to size you get is Jorah says, you know, 100,000 Dothraki down there, and you know, that's the only time you've heard a number since season one, probably.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like when they mentioned, like, as they were leading the Khaleesi to Vaes Dothrak, the Dothraki were not even really making a big deal about it. Which, I mean, I guess that makes sense. But you know, even Daenerys' reaction didn't seem like, oh gosh, I'm going to Vaes Dothrak, that's probably important. Like, you know, none of that really led me to think that, oh, this is a big important place. So when the end of the episode happened, when Daenerys burned the temple down with all the calls inside of it, like, man, that was it was awesome. But it wasn't until just before that, you know, with some of the conversations and some of the comments from Daario and Jorah, that I realized just where she was. And by doing that in the center of all things, Dothraki, what that meant.
Yeah. You know? Well, and in season one, when they go there, because that's where Viserion, her brother, was killed, you don't have a sense of size. You just see kind of the hut and the inside of that hut.
You're right. And that could be probably just season one budget.
Yeah.
You know, like that, you know, and they got into that. I'm just like, I've got a thing for visuals and places, and this does not at all look like the same place where she ate the horse heart and all that kind of stuff. Like, it felt, even the hut felt bigger this time around, you know, and I mean, it's been years. They could have easily just, you know, one, it's nomadic probably, so the thing is never set up the same twice. But then also, like, just maybe it's a bigger tent. Like, I don't know. You know, there's lots of things that can change. But yeah, I did get a little bit of a separation there. I didn't connect the two right away.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. Until she said, this is where I did this. Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly. When you got some dialogue from her. And again, we deal with this, like, weird thing with Daenerys where she goes blowhard for, like, two or three episodes and everybody just either ignores her or just says, like, well, that doesn't matter. So we don't care who you are. You know, and then all of a sudden it matters who she is and what she can do. And then when she's laying down the smack talk, you just like, you can feel yourself leaning forward in your chair going, oh yeah, this is going to be good.
Yeah. She seems to get like one really big moment every season. And this feels like it, because the stuff happening in Essos and around her, I feel like they kind of drag it out and it goes kind of slow and, you know, but when she gets those moments, man, they're a big deal.
Yeah, no, one of the coolest things that I think they did this, the last couple seasons with her, and this goes to one of your comments too, in all of the scenes where she's a queen and she's got Daario and there's like, whether she's flirting with somebody to try to get her way and then double-crossing them, or whether she really is having a relationship with Daario, there's at no point do you ever feel that she is a victim. And even any kind of nudity or sexuality has been tasteful and covered up. Like, she's not doing any nude scenes, anything like that. But then, both for just necessity, because when she's, even though she's fireproof, her clothes are not, and then this huge fire, her clothes would burn off, and then she emerges naked, and there's you know, a nude scene with Daenerys. It's nothing but power. Like, in no way.
Oh, yeah, it's very regal.
Yeah, it's regal. Exactly. It, like, it doesn't diminish, you know, anything about her femininity or anything like that. Like, it's not like every other nude scene in Game of Thrones that is either a whore, someone being raped, or some other, like, or someone ripping clothes off of someone. Like, it's not at all just ripping someone down,
well,
right?
And I will say the last couple of seasons, I feel, well, maybe more this season especially, but there hasn't been as much like of like that gratuitous sexual violence, so to speak. Like, there, it's not as like, oh, here's boobs, you know. It's I don't know if that's just a change in the tone of the overall arc of the story that they're going for, to kind of show that the world is going to be changing, or if it's in response to, you know, fans or what. But it's definitely you know, kind of cooling off a little bit, which, you know, it's kind of a good thing, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there was some sex happening with the Dothraki as they were partying into the night. But again, it's all dark.
Didn't
corner.
Really see anything. Yeah.
It's from behind. You get that they're having sex in the streets, but like, that's it. That's all you needed to know.
Yes.
So you don't need to see three cuts of that with boobs flying everywhere and people screaming and stuff like that. Like, it was just enough to communicate what's happening, and then you just move on.
Yeah. It wasn't like someone walking into, you know, Littlefinger's brothel and seeing, like, you know, 20 naked people parade by.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because we're moving into war times, like, I'm wondering if there's less just jolly drinking going on, and more straight up people just need to be fighting and having their wits about them and all that kind of stuff. Or at least those are the scenes. Those scenes are now so important that that's all the time they have to show us.
That's
so
true.
So there's no time for really, you know, that.
There's
in between.
A lot of stories they're juggling at once.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say something about the like, there's no sexual violence, but I feel like the violence is still there. They haven't changed that.
Well, even the scene, to kind of skip ahead just a hair, but when Osha gets killed by Ramsay, they easily could have just had her get naked and hop on top of him, but they didn't, you know?
Yep. No, that's true. Yeah, that's true. And that was something that I kind of knew it was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just because it's Ramsay, for one. You kind of know what he's doing. But he's sitting there eating an apple with a very large knife. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, I kind of know where this is going. But I'm kind of surprised that it wasn't like a 2-episode-long torture fest.
Yeah, she got off pretty quick.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, and I'm obviously, everyone's probably pretty fearful for Rickon, but, you know, we haven't seen him in, what, 2 seasons, and even this season we've seen him for, what, 30 seconds, maybe? So, I don't know. I have a feeling things aren't going to end well for Rickon.
Yeah, and I feel like in order for Rickon, like, I think he's going to have to survive because of Ramsay wants to get his way, and he wants to get his way and humiliate John, and he can't do that if he just offs Rickon. He at least has to have John and Sansa believe that Rickon is still alive. Whether or not he is or not, I guess, is something entirely. But him being able to pull Rickon out by the hair and kill him in front of Sansa and John—that would, like, that would be his ultimate victory, right? Like,
that's, oh yeah, definitely. No, I see that. Or that he gets flayed in front of them, or something.
Something like that, right? So I don't see him killing him sooner than he absolutely has to or wants to.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you can't start torturing him and do other kind of horrible things to him. Theon comes to mind. So there's all kinds of stuff. And the other thing too is that whatever happens, they're not going to show any of that because Rickon is so young.
Well, you know, they showed Ollie get hanged, so you never know what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, how old was Ollie supposed to be, do you think? Teenager? 14?
Maybe, I don't know, I thought 12.
Yeah, I mean, it was an awkward scene, for sure, but I feel like Rickon's a lot younger. I feel like he's under 10.
I think he's supposed to be in the story, but he doesn't look like he's 10.
No, well, they skew everybody older, for sure. I mean, Sansa in the books is like 15, and she's obviously closer to like a 20-year-old in the show. I mean, on purpose, because it makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. Same with Arya. Arya in the show is like 12 or something like that, and then she's closer to 14 or 15, mm-hmm. I would say, supposed to be in the show. I actually don't know how old Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner are in real life. I feel like Sophie Turner's 21 or something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah, they're both out of high school. I know that much. Just from, I think I follow Maisie Williams on Twitter. She's actually really quite funny. And I can't remember who else I follow, but I just, they don't post that often. Or at least I don't see it there very often.
Yeah.
But how did you feel about how Tyrion handled things in, where is he, Marine?
Yes. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this pans out, because he's trying to bring the Westeros style of politics to Essos, and that's pretty intriguing. But, you know, now that Dany's got, like, her horde of 100,000 Dothraki who are pretty violent, and, you know, she's, you know, been known to get angry and a little violent on her own. You know, it's not that she's never fed people to her dragons or anything. Mm. So I don't know how she's going to feel about that, because she's taken a very hard line against slavery. So I don't know if this was like Tyrion's first misstep, or if it's, or if she's going to show up and be like, well, all right, fine. And well, I don't know. And we'll see. I'm curious to see how that all pans out, because she wasn't 100% trusting of him in the first place.
Mm. I feel like there's going to be some backlash there. I think the what's going to win out in the end is, even though he said, hey, you've got 7 years, I feel like that will at least, if they hold up their end of the bargain, give them some wiggle room with the Sons of the Harpy, like letting the pressure off.
Yeah. So. Yeah. They'll at least, you'll get a reprieve. And, you know, him mentioning that, hey, I grew up richer than you and I never had slaves, like, that did seem to intrigue them.
Yeah.
Like, hey, how do we get that too? You know, he's dangling that carrot. That carrot. In front of
yeah,
them.
For sure. For sure. I mean, all of it could be completely moot if Dany returns with the Dothraki behind her. Sons of the Harpy not going to have a whole lot of opportunities. Well, I almost after
feel like,
that.
Yeah, like I feel like with her, with the Dothraki behind her, if they agree to go over the Narrow Sea, then, you know, we might be seeing her invading King's Landing next season.
Yeah. Do you think she's going to go straight for King's Landing?
I don't know. I mean, I can't. I have no idea, because I was thinking about that today. The you know, Tywin and some other people were always keeping tabs on her, and you would hear updates in the small council meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't, like, the people in Westeros aren't even thinking. She's not on their mind at all. Like, mm-hmm. they're so you know, preoccupied with everything going on, you know, whether it be, you know, with the Septons or the other houses or the White Walkers. Like, everyone's so distracted. She's just going to be able to walk in and just take over without much of a fight when she does decide to come to Westeros.
Yeah, not to mention the power struggle happening in King's Landing right now makes them from the outside anyway. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, I just kind of clued into this when I was reading your notes before the show. It would be interesting to see if Daenerys actually lands in Dorne with everybody.
Huh.
Because
I don't know what her motivation would be to go to Dorne, though.
I don't either. I'm just wondering if it's a way to offload the army at that scale and have it not be detected.
Unless, because, you know, the Dornish were loyal to the Targaryens. Maybe she, wants to get, you know, allies on the mainland and goes to talk to them first. That's a cool theory. I like that.
Right? Because the women, the Sand Snakes,
mm-hmm.
they don't like the Lannisters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they want them out. So, uh-huh. you know, they certainly like ruling with strength. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch any slaves in Dorne. There were servants, but that's...
No, it's a pretty free culture, what it seems like. And even women are equal to men. Like, mm-hmm. It's not just males ascending to the throne. It's the eldest kid, you know, that gets it.
Yeah, and it was recently I was looking at a map of Westeros, and I didn't realize it. I mean, it's a huge peninsula. It's a long way around, mm-hmm. but Dorne is connected. Like, it's not an island.
Yeah, it's just really far south.
Yeah, like, I mean, the earth mind in me kind of pictured South America, kind of, for Dorne, you know, okay. and then King's Landing around Florida and, like, you know, everything else kind of going up north. But when you look at it, when you look at Westeros on a map, like, there's a pretty sizable peninsula connecting them. So, like, again, like, if you want to get into, Westeros and not just land in King's Landing and have immediate... confrontation and resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can get everybody offloaded and then on horses in Dorne, and then, and I don't have time to look this up right now, but my map is a little bit fuzzy. I feel like if she swings up from Dorne, she then lands in Highgarden.
Well, I was looking at a bunch of maps recently. So High Garden is more northwest.
Right.
So if you stick along the coast, that's where you get to the Stormlands where Renly Baratheon was. And then a little further north of that is King's Landing.
Okay. Where's if she comes in Dorne and she goes up and she comes in from the west, where does she land? Is that the Lannisters?
She comes in from the west? Yeah, the Lannisters, like Casterly Rock is on the west coast, if I remember. It's like equilateral with King's Landing, if I remember correctly. Right.
So if she comes up that way, then maybe that's how, like, Tyrion brings them into Casterly Rock.
Yeah, you know? I don't know.
I'm just wondering, like, if she gets in there and she then attacks someplace like Highgarden, which is like the food for the entire continent. Like, just, you know, there's definitely some havoc that can be wreaked. You know, reaped, not wreaked. I'm having a brain fart day. You know, I'm loving season 6, but it makes me kind of ache a little bit for season 7.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've got so much to get. We've got to get through, you know, ultimately the Battle of Winterfell is going to be a pretty big deal when it happens.
I would say that's probably this season's climax.
Yeah.
You know, I think.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
You think it's going to be mid-season?
Honestly, I don't know. Well, that kind of, if you want, that kind of circles us back around to kind of Littlefinger and Robin also. Cause
that's true, right?
The Aerys is joining the fight and they're going to be marching north now.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because I always think of the Aerys as more, like you said, equilateral with Winterfell, but it's not. It's much further south.
Yeah, no, it's a little further east and kind of in between Winterfell and King's Landing, I guess.
Yeah, it's on the other side of the Twins, I think, too. The rivers.
Yes.
Riverlands. That I don't. Yeah, I can't remember what it's called, but it's where Catelyn Stark was from originally.
Yes.
The Tullys' homestead. But yeah, like, I enjoy Littlefinger. Not because I like him, but because I like to hate him. And then what he then brings to the show and the kind of conniving and plot twisting and stuff. I can't stand Robin. Like,
I can't either. Oh, my gosh. Throw him
through the moon door. Like, you know, I just... so because of that, or because of at least his character, you know that Littlefinger's probably going to get his way. Like, it's probably going to... He's probably going to have an easy time influence things.
He's been pulling strings since the beginning of the show, you know. I don't want to see, and I don't think she will, but I don't want to see Sansa fall victim to his manipulations again.
Mm.
Like, I want her to be able to turn the tables on him, you know, because they had some interesting conversations last season before he delivered her to the Boltons about, you know, her learning these kind of things. And, you know, she's, after everything she went through, she's fed up. She's not going to be putting up with a lot of crap anymore.
No. And I feel like what would happen if that was the case was that he would try to convince Jon that he's a friend. Mm-hmm. And he would use, you know, saving Sansa from King's Landing and all this kind of stuff to convince Jon to trust him.
And
if we have to watch that, all of us are just going to be cringing.
Oh, I know. Because it's like, no, don't fall for it, Jon. Don't fall for it, Jon. Yeah, don't fall for it, Jon.
Exactly. Exactly. I just I keep on waiting for these buddy cop moments where people are just kind of like, I will kill you, Jon Snow. And he's going to be like, I've been there, done that. That doesn't really scare me anymore. Like,
there's so
many. I mean, those one-liners are just going to be going to be so good. Oh, man. I really enjoyed the quieter scenes at Winterfell with Jon and Sansa. There wasn't a lot of death reference, but it was certainly alluded to with, like, some long stares from Jon.
I got the impression from their conversation that they had already talked about, like, hey, here's the key points of what happened to me.
Yeah.
And then they were kind of reflecting on it. You know?
No, it was great that we didn't have to sit through the
exposition.
Recap. Yeah, exactly. Which is something you would have had to do on network television, even if it was just like last episode.
Yeah.
And they would have said something very specific. Like, if this was a CW show and they were talking about a breakup and instead they were talking about, well, when I escaped from Winterfell 4.5 months ago.
Yeah.
Like, it would be very specific, you know, it's like, we've only been broken up for five and three-eighths months. So I don't know how to take this. You know, I just, mm-hmm. Oh God, like, that kind of stuff drives me crazy. Just call it six months. Like,
So I love the Sansa Jon scenes, but I think my favorite scene in Winterfell was the dinner table scene when Tormund Giantbane is sitting there eating his food and just giving Brienne
Castle
Black, she's got this look on her face like, oh my gosh, what do I do? No one's ever looked at me like this. It was so good. It was so great.
Yeah. They would make a formidable couple. Jeez.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, you know, they're both the size of mountains.
Mm-hmm. It's insane. Yeah, no, that would be cool to see.
I, you know, and it's funny, now that we've got Sansa and Brienne and Pod all with Jon and Tormund, like, I want to be there when Sansa and Brienne and Pod see a giant for the first time.
Yes.
Right? I mean, like, or I don't even know.
Or is Winwin just hanging around the fort? I don't know.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? There was in the books. But then also even just Ghost as a direwolf. Like, I mean, I'm sure Brienne has heard of them and wouldn't be necessarily surprised. But I mean, I would imagine her eyeing up a dog the size or a wolf the size of a horse would be an interesting scene.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would remind Sansa of her lost.
Yeah, Sansa would be used to it. But see, back when Sansa had not Nymeria, what was the Sansa's pup's name?
I don't remember the wolves' names except for Ghost.
Man.
Well, now I know what Shaggy Dog was Rickon's.
Yeah, Shaggy Dog was Rickon's. Summer is Bran's. Ghost, I did this last week. Ghost is John's. What was...
Like, they rarely mentioned them in the show anyways. Yeah, and that, since I'm not a book reader, I don't have that reference, you know?
I'm just... It's bugging me now. You know, if only it was attached to the internet.
Yeah, if only there was some way to look this up.
Sansa's Wolf. Bet you it's the first hit. First hit on Google. What do you say, Google? You say, lady. Why the hell couldn't I remember that? Jeez. And then Rob's Wolf was... TikTok. Google, wow, you're making me look dumb here. Come on.
That was like the wolf death there was a couple of them that died. Well, three of them now, I guess. But like Rob's wolf when that died, that was disturbing. Like,
yeah.
You know, because it was defenseless and then they cut its head off and put it on his body. And oh my gosh, it was so messed up.
Yeah, Grey Wind was Rob's wolf. I knew it had a cool name.
Mm-hmm.
I've always was really disappointed with Shaggy Dog. I mean, I realized that Rickon was maybe three or four when he named the dog.
Yeah.
But Summer. I don't know. I always thought that Summer was a little bit not a strong name. But I don't know. That's just me. I mean, it is a giant wolf.
This is true.
You know? We should probably wrap things up on Game of Thrones. Any final thoughts on the episode? Anything that you want to kind of throw out there, kind of tinfoil hat?
Just, I don't know, super enjoyable. I mean, how tinfoil hatty do you want me to be? Do you
We get so focused on the Citadel Cafe. I'd love to hear something just outside the box.
Okay, so then this is something I read. This is not my own theory, but I liked it. So in King's Landing, here's the theory, is that Lady, you know, they've made a deal where the Tullys are going to show up. Tullys? Or yep. No. Tullys are going to show up with their army, and they're going to take out the Septons. Well, just like how when in the backstory of when the Targaryens' rule ended, the Lannisters showed up to help them, you know, defend the city, and then they took over and drove them out. I wouldn't be surprised if you see, like, a coup happening with the Tullys and against the Lannisters, you know.
Sorry, I'm going to interject one. It's the Tyrells. I agree with you. Tyrells, but I knew it didn't sound right. Yeah, Tullys is the twins and the river folk. Sorry, yeah, Tyrells. I'm avoiding emails.
I'm even going to change in the notes because I will keep saying the wrong name anyway.
Sorry, go on.
Same thing happens. Like, so they drive out. She has Tommen poisoned just like Joffrey.
Oh, wow.
You know, and Cersei getting to Cersei's prophecy of all her kids dying and then being killed by her younger sibling or whatever. Like, so the theory I read was that she, you know, Tommen dies, she goes nuts, she orders for, you know, the wildfire that's hidden under the city to be activated, and Jaime kills her to stop her from doing it.
Right. I forget about the wildfire.
Yeah, it's still there. I don't know. They haven't referenced it in a long time, so I don't know. They tend to kind of like give you little pokes and prods of like, hey, we've got this still hidden over here. Just like, you know, last week's scene with Sam and Gilly on the boat. Like, hey, they're still out there, guys. Don't forget about them.
Yeah. Another theory for the wildfire would be if Daenerys does capture King's Landing, then she would have it.
Yeah. So going back, and this is another thing I read, that, oh yeah, this happened in the show. Remember the vision she had where she's at the Iron Throne and it's like King's Landing is like the whole throne room is just like wrecked.
Yeah, it's all, it looks like it's snowing, but it's ash.
So what if King's Landing does get destroyed?
Oh.
Like, what if the wildfire is set off? Like, that would be kind of crazy. Yeah. That would definitely shake up the whole power structure of Westeros, for sure.
Yep. Yeah, and we would get, like, a Death Star-like explosion at the end of one of the... not at the end, but in episode 8 or 9 of one of the seasons, we would have something epic like that happen. I just... Yeah,
that's a bit out there as far as theories go, but, you know...
Yeah, I mean, I just assumed when I saw that vision, and thanks for reminding me, I just assumed that her dragons had burned it, like that they had raised it to the ground, or at least the castle, you know, just to kind of say, you know, this is what we're doing. So, it would be fitting too, because like the throne is of course melted of swords and all that kind of stuff. It'd be cool to have it completely melted by one of the dragons, just like Iron Throne, it's it's a puddle of nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many. It's such a well-crafted story in general. Like, there's so many things that could happen, you know?
And I feel like, you know, the journey that Jaime has been on, you know, to realize either the madness or the evil of his sister would be not necessarily redemption, but kind of take him again down the path that they've set him on.
Yeah, it would be like history repeating itself, essentially, because he was the Kingslayer, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Right on. Well, we should probably move into the Internet Minute, which is, of course, brought to you by tweakedaudio.com. You can go to that website for noise-reducing earbuds. They're pretty high performance, too. Really cool looking. I used to wear them when I go running and stuff like that. They have a non-tug cord, like they've got like a braided cord on them. You can get free shipping and 30% off the entire order if you use TCC at checkout at tweakedaudio.com. And as always, we thank them for their support. This week, I have a couple of really quick picks. Mine is Art versus Artist. It's a meme that's happening right now on Twitter and Instagram. Instagram would arguably be probably one of the better places to check it out. Mm-hmm, essentially, what it is artists taking a photo of themselves and then in a 9x9 grid with that photo in the middle, putting 8 pieces of their art around them. I think it was meant to be like, do you look like your art? Like if you're a female artist and you're painting a lot of girls, do the girls end up sort of looking like you subconsciously? I think that's how it started. Nothing I do looks like me. So I enter into the part of the meme where it's just, this is the guy that did these things. Like there's a person that made that. And I really enjoy that aspect of it. I've got an illustration of myself as my avatar for most social media places, with the exception of maybe Facebook. And even if I do switch it, it's usually a picture of me at a convention around the time of a convention so that people can recognize me and say like, oh, okay, so he's not a cartoon right now, but that's what he looks like. But then even at the convention, I've got a sign that has my cartoon on it so that people can say, oh yeah, I recognize that from Twitter, because it's a pretty distinctive, you know, color and shape and all that kind of stuff. So doing this kind of stuff, I thought it was really cool. I've discovered a bunch of new artists that I really enjoy. And it's a great way to just kind of see really like eight pieces from them in one quick go. And all of them have been chosen by the artist. It's not like it's a random thing like the top 9 or best 9 that Instagram did a little while ago. I think it was around Christmas. And they just take your top performing posts and put them in a grid of 9. This one was something that you had to go and select yourself. So it took me a little while to actually, one, to find a picture of myself. I don't have any. And then two, to realize that I really haven't drawn for myself that much. I've done some fan art, which has been super fun. But I've really been spending so much time on client work, like projects that take like the whole month. And then you're like, all right, well, that was great. You know, I love my clients and it's nice to pay my rent that way. But then all of a sudden it's like, well, I haven't drawn anything for me. Like I don't have anything to just kind of share. So, I'm trying to break that habit and do more kind of early morning sketching and stuff, share a little bit more about the commissions and get, if I can, like when I'm doing a commission with somebody that's not a gift for somebody, that's another reason too, is that I'll share my commissions, but sometimes like the general public is like, well, that's cool, but I don't know them. So
yeah, it's like, I have no end to connect with that.
Yeah. Or I have to wait quite a while because it's a Christmas gift or it's a birthday gift. And then it's a secret. Like I did a commission, and I can only say so much about it because I haven't been given the green light to share it yet, but I did a commission for a local law firm that I work with on a regular basis as a corporate gift for a CEO in Canada, which is a big deal for me. And I'm itching to share this with people. And I can't because I don't know if the gift has been received yet. And
so I'm trying to get out there. And...
Yeah. And I don't want to, it's not like I'm going to forget about it, but like I kind of would like to do it in a timely manner because right now it just feels like, well, Joel didn't do anything like that last week of April. It's like, no, I was working on this thing and I just couldn't post it. You know, so like that kind of stuff has been a little bit frustrating. But yeah, check out, if you just do a quick search for art versus artist, either on Twitter or on Instagram, you will find immediately the hashtag and all the posts that go along with it. And I think it's really cool.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting. Like anytime, like it's human nature. Like if you see a face in a picture, you gravitate towards it to look at it. So I think it's neat for the artists to put themselves in these pictures and kind of, you know, definitely it's a way to raise awareness of yourself, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Artists are people too. I mean, that's the whole other side of this meme that I won't get into here. But like I really enjoy, I really enjoy reminding people that it's not a computer that makes the art.
You know, yeah.
And half of my posts, if not more, are hand-drawn. Like, there's not a lot of digital stuff in my in my grid. Yeah. The other quick pick I have is, and I've shared his art on the show before, it's just really fitting because of the amount of time that we spent talking about Overwatch, and that is Jason Nguyen, or Nguyen. He did a Reaper fan art piece. So if you want to check out that, the notes will be in there.
His stuff is always cool.
His stuff is fantastic. But the Reaper especially is, it's like, at first I thought, I was like, no, it's not Darth Vader. No, it's not Kylo Ren. Ooh, I know who that is.
Yeah.
He took a really, really cool spin on it, and it feels very foreboding. Well,
his lines just make him look all that much more sinister.
Yes, very true, very true. I would kill to watch a video of Jason doing his thing. I've not looked that hard, but I can't easily find him doing time-lapse videos because I would love it because he's got such a unique style. I feel like there's a lot of layers.
Yeah.
A lot of, not necessarily Photoshop layers, but layers of color, just building things up with texture and whatnot.
Oh yeah. He uses a pretty wide palette of colors for sure. Yeah.
What about you, sir? What is your pick this week?
Well, I play a ton of tabletop games and I follow a lot of tabletop news, but my recommendation is Shut Up and Sit Down at shutupandsitdown.com. It's some guys in the UK and they do game news, reviews, walkthroughs, and they're very entertaining about it. It's not just a video of someone talking about here's the game and here's why I like it. Like they almost make skits out of it. Like they do like a themed skit almost based on the game where they do kind of like a minute or two lead in of like a silly story of them messing around or whatever, and then they kind of get into the game, but they're very engaging about it. It's very entertaining, and if you're interested in tabletop games at all, like if you play them, or even if you're thinking about getting into them, they're pretty new player friendly as far as like how they, like, you know, their vocabulary, and they don't use too much jargon and whatnot.
Cool.
Yeah, I highly recommend them.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And so they do videos or they do podcasts or?
Yes. There's articles. There's
the whole network of content.
Yes, I think they do at least a video a week, and they do the podcast occasionally. Mm. Like they might average doing it once a month. It's not their high priority. Like their priority is always their videos.
Well, and I can see, given what they're reviewing, that video would be a lot better.
Yes.
Yeah. Not to mention that if you have an excuse to do video these days, like if that's something that suits your product, then you should, because video is definitely the new hotness.
Yeah, it's a very visual and tactile, you know, hobby.
Yeah, cool. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. iTunes reviews are a fantastic way for the show to reach new listeners. We are all caught up on our reviews, so if you'd like to leave one, you can almost guarantee that it's going to be read here next week. Another way to support the show is through Patreon. Basically, we go on a value-for-value model. If you enjoy the show and you get some value out of it and you want to put some value back in, go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. It is completely 100% up to you. The reward that we have right now is basically you get our thanks, and you get included in the Slack chat, which is kind of just this Patreon community that we have going on. Our most productive supporters, I'll call it that, are all in there talking about the show, talking about what's happening. And for all of you in the Slack and for all of you that are listening on the show now, if you do decide to become a patron, I would love to hear your thoughts on a reward, a goal, anything. When we started this little cafe on Patreon, it was just a very, very simple, straightforward site. But we'd like to kind of add more, put some goals down, maybe some specials, things that you guys would want me to get together with some podcasting buddies and do. So let me know. You can drop us a line at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, or even just if you're a patron, comment right on the Patreon site, because then that's awesome. I've got this, you know, kind of collection of people that are supporting us financially, and I can talk to you guys about what you want in the show. It's actually something that's really important to me. So if you wouldn't mind, let me know. Everything that I am doing is at joelduggan.com. That happens to be my first and last name. Imagine that. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram and all those places, usually with Joel Duggan. I think Facebook is the only one that I had to do Joel Duggan illustration, because Joel Duggan is my personal profile. If you at all are interested in art books, check out forgepublishing.com. We just sent out our second newsletter yesterday. This morning. So if you go ahead and sign up, I can keep track of when people sign up and then send you the newsletters that you missed. So the first, you know, sign up, you might get a big kind of swash of news, but usually it's going to be weekly as far as I can. We've been talking about Daily Paintings, which is Piper Thibodeau's new art book that's going to be coming out in the next couple of months. We're going to be doing a Kickstarter coming up soon, and all of the information surrounding that is happening in the newsletter. And there's also a conversation happening between newsletter subscribers and me as far as, you know, rewards and potential stuff like that. So check out forgepublishing.com if you're interested in Piper's new art book. That's it for me, man. Aaron, where can people find you online?
On Twitter, I'm DiceLabAaron with two A's. I don't tweet a lot. You can also follow DiceLab Games on Twitter and DiceLabGames.com for tabletop game design related articles. I don't have a lot of specifics to share yet on games, because things are, obviously things are up in the air. Nothing's published yet, but making progress. Every once in a while you'll see something on there. But if you're into games, give me a follow.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Just don't roll two, that's usually bad.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.